All right, here we go. We're back with another weekly Shill Farm podcast hosted on our very own bullshit platform through our Big Shill mics. Hosted by me and our Chris, two thick as mince part breeds from Yorkshire. This is episode 290. Format is simple. We release a minimum of four shows a month. Members get full podcast plus download. Non-members get part one plus download. All shows are released on Saturdays, always on our private bullshit platform at sheepfarm.co.uk. We also put part one on Podomatic that distribute out to Spotify, Amazon, Audible and Apple and a few others. Please subscribe to the website for email notifications for new shows. It doesn't cost you anything to subscribe. You just get the email notification for shows, live shows and anything else that might be going on. But you can subscribe if you want. Chris is always nudging me to say that. But anyway, if you don't want, that's all right as well. Join Chris on Instagram. Email us at info@sheepfarm.co.uk. You can join Chris at Gaping Gobs as well. The Gaping Gobs Society. That'd be a good one, that. Also, thanks everybody for ordering supplements. And what's he pointing at, Chris, now?
I'm fucking muted again.
Again. No, I muted you.
Right.
Because the reason why I muted you for this intro is because as soon as I press record, you go and start coughing and spluttering. So I thought, you know what? It says me editing it all out. I might as well just mute you and then bring you in when required. Very professional, I thought.
Yeah, very professional. If you could do follow us on Instagram, follow us on sheepfarm.co.uk on Instagram as well. Because people are following my personal Instagram, which I don't really do anything on. I only really do on Sheep Farm or Gaping Gobs.
Right.
I do look at it, but you're better off following Sheep Farm if that's why you're following it, not me.
Yeah.
If you know what I mean.
Not all rubber lips. This is the intro to 290. Hopefully, I will say this, hopefully our friend from Hawaii, Loomis, will be joining us. And we will have spoken about, we recorded this before, as you can tell by why I'm saying it. We will have recorded a show about sacred sites, pyramids and things like that, which we're always interested in discussing.
Yeah, right on my alley.
Yeah, yeah. Loomis is a tour guide, so sometimes he gets called out because the time difference, we'll be recording in the evening, he'll be recording in the morning, like 12-hour time difference. So, yeah. I've released a couple of podcasts recently that I've actually gone on to other people's podcasts to talk about my book, Traitors. And this week I released one with a guy called Piers Cross, who we'll hopefully get on our podcast. We're going to meet him at the live show. He's coming over to the live show, Chris, because I found out he only lives in Halifax.
All right. I've listened to a few of his podcasts. Yeah. Really good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Seems like a nice chap.
Yeah, he's a nice chap. Is it the Emerging Man podcast? The Evolving Man podcast, it is, that he does. He's got what you call a luxurious beard.
Yeah, seems like a nice guy.
He's a nice guy. Very nice guy. Well, he made a film with a chap he knows called Boarding on Insanity. And that film basically told us what we all thought. Now, I ain't saying that everybody who went to boarding school had a bad experience or didn't like it. Some people, I'm sure, did like it. And also, I'm not hitting on people who went to boarding school. I've no problem with people going to boarding school. I've got no people with any sort of class either. I'm not... I've never had a problem with class or thinking, they've got one up on us or anything like that. When I do research on stuff like this, I'm only going where the cards are dealt, you know? And it's a proven point that some of these places seem to pick individuals out and turn them into monsters.
Mm.
Now, this film, Boarding on Insanity, which I've watched a couple of times now, you can actually, I think you can only hire it. I don't think you can buy it. It's on Vimeo. You can buy it on Vimeo. Boarding on Insanity.
And I haven't watched it actually. Fact.
Yeah, I'll have to give you... It's actually run out. The rental's run out. You're not going to have to rent it yourself. If we do get him on, just so you've got you can ask the question. But what it does show, and is that the people that are in charge of the, not just politicians, not just not just the royal family, but people who've been put in charge of large corporates and things like that, high-end doctors, lawyers, legal system, etc., police chiefs, all went through this process. And not all of them were abused, say, sexually or physically, but they were what they got across in this, in their film, was that they trained them how to be basically narcissists, and to feel superior over everybody else. Not everybody turned out like that, obviously. I mean, there's a few people in there. I've quoted, is it Alex Renton? He also made a film a few years ago. He went to Boris Johnson's school, and that's where the synergy came. He heard me talking on Mark Devlin's podcast about Boris Johnson, and he'd had Alex Renton, I think we're Alex Renton, his surname was Renton anyway, on his in his film. So, yeah. Although somebody did actually, I'm actually now, Chris, a communist, apparently. a left-wing communist, because I'm trying to call out everybody who went to boarding school. I mean, this person's obviously not listened to anything that we've said. I'm a Marxist, that's it. I'm a Marxist. It's strange, I think, that if you don't agree with that person, that means you're the opposite. It's a bit like George Bush, you're either with us or you're with the terrorists. Well, I can have another view, actually.
Yeah. You can, why can't I disagree with a few things that someone says and not everything and still be all right with it?
Yeah, why can't I have why can't I not be any of them things that you say?
Why does noisms are noisms artists.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. It is strange. Apparently, I'm small-minded. I didn't say you were small-minded, so, but you weren't on the podcast, so maybe you're small-minded as well.
No, I mean, I would agree you are quite small-minded, to be fair.
Yeah, I am, yeah. Small-headed peanut.
Yeah, you're a peanut.
We'll talk about that in part two, actually, because, and we'll go into detail on some of that, not because I want to pick on people who are writing comments, because that might be a bot, I don't know who it is, but the fact is, there is a lot of infighting at the moment. Chris, can you shut that blind over your shoulder? It's really bright over your shoulder.
Yeah, yeah. I was just thinking
yeah.
Global climate warming change.
You what?
Global climate warming change.
Yeah, we'll talk about that in part two as well. Okay, if you want, I suppose the live show we've got going on a week on Saturday. Come round quick, that isn't it?
Fucking has
a week on Saturday. A week on Friday. Week on Friday. Yeah. You booked something else in, aren't you? I can see where your little brain's whirring around.
No. What I was thinking was, I was going to make some new stuff, and I didn't realise how bloody quick it had come round. Mental.
Yes, menkel. A lot of people emailed in about the London one. We're actually got penciled in for October the 3rd. So we haven't sent any tickets out yet. I'll give it another week or so, probably up to the live event we do.
A few people asked me, and I've
probably July we'll start sending emails out for tickets. So a couple of weeks left, just to email in if you would like to come down. There's going to be obviously me and Chris, Mark and John, and we're probably I was thinking on the Saturday in July, this next one that's coming up in a week's time, what we're going to do is something slightly different. I've been thinking of ways, how do you get more people involved? Because obviously you can't get more talks. But so what I'm thinking is, our talk that we normally do on our own, we'll have a guest with us instead. So I think this time Matt Sergio is going to come on stage and we'll talk about some of the work we've been doing with him for an hour or so before John and Mark have their talk.
Yeah,
and so idea. Yeah, and that means then we can get sort of somebody extra in, if you like, to discuss certain things, and it's not just me and you rabbiting on. Does that make sense? But yeah, because we're limited to time, really, aren't we, there?
Before we stop the intro, we want to mention Matt Landman's geoengineering meetup on Saturday, which I went to. The numbers weren't quite as big as last time, but it was still good though. Really good. Met some really nice people. Some people we know, some regulars, like Zoe and her mum and kid, and Rob and his family. Jennifer. Right. Jennifer.
Mad bastard.
She got a minute. She told me off for calling her Jennifer. Right. So I won't say Jennifer ever again. Yeah. Yeah. Really nice.
How does she put up with that mad bastard?
I don't know. But I don't know. Well, she listens to us, so she can't be that.
She can't be that safe.
Off centre, can Yeah, it was really good. I think we're going to get, we just got an email from Matt, so I think rather than chat about it, we'll just get him on to talk about it.
Probably be the week
next
after.
Week,
no,
it'll
be week after, won't it? Next week, obviously. We're getting ready for live show. I've got a podcast to release, actually, one we did with Matt next week. So I thought I'd release that one next week. And then we can have sort of a week off getting ready for this. That makes sense. Mm-hmm. I don't know why we're talking about that now, but we are. there you go. That's the intro to 290. Hopefully, it's going to be Lumens that you're here with us next, or it'll just be me and Chris again. Anyway, either way, there you go. Mm. So if you join us in part two, we'll see you there. If not, bye.
Bye.
Okay, welcome back to Sheep Farm Studios. Thanks for tuning in. This is episode 290. And I'm presenting on my own tonight. Chris has got a bit of an emergency going on with his cat. Hopefully he might be able to join us. Hopefully it's not too bad. But today I'm joined by Loomis, who we had a conversation, about an hour and a half conversation, or 2 hours, back in January, February, I think it was, or even March. Time's passing that quick. Loomis is in Hawaii at the moment, although he tells me he's moving to Australia at some point in the near future. Many of you will know Loomis as the proprietor of the Chant It Down podcast on YouTube, and he's been doing a lot of fantastic work for a long time. Loomis is also the director of a documentary called Sacred Site, which is officially live right now, although I think it was released last year, wasn't it, Loomis? Am I right there?
Yeah, last year. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The film takes a deep look into uncovering our ancient past, and how he's got through all that work, I don't know, but he has. So we're going to talk about the last series of Sacred Site and the new series that he's been working on as well as a few other things. Welcome to Sheep Farm Studios, Loomis.
Hey, thanks for having me. It's great to be here and talk with you again, and looking forward to this.
Yeah, although it took us a while to get the first one sort of going, didn't it? Because we were both busy doing other things. I were writing a book. You've been promoting your documentary series. How's the documentary series gone?
Oh, well, I'm on season two, and it's going excellent. It's got some pretty big discoveries that I think are going to be kind of like history changing in small ways, even involving some carbon dating and stuff. And lots of expeditions, and it's kind of crazy how it all just sort of unfolded. And so what I consider season one is the trailer for really, like, just the pilot, rather. It's the pilot for what I'm doing now. Like, it's like the template for what really needed to be done. So that's what's happening. It's pretty good.
I think the first one's covered not necessarily things that everybody knew, but you sort of put it all together, didn't you? Consolidated all the information that was out there into a series. Am I right there in the first series?
Yeah. And so I guess what happened, and I should explain what happened in the first season. So I went to Egypt in 2023, and I was really inspired because you go there and like I got all this footage, and I'm like, okay, I'm going to make a documentary on ancient sites. I got all this footage. Why not? But then I really started thinking about it, like, and then things started happening to me here in Hawaii, where I got, talked about or heard about sites here. And I'm like, really? Oh, okay. So midway through the production of the first season, that kind of became the focus more so. And because that became more the focus, that kind of split the thing in half. But then I realized, like, wait, I can't offer anything new about Egypt. Everybody's on that, or Peru, or any other big ancient sites. Like, what can I do to add to much of that? Probably not a whole lot. But what I can do to add to this puzzle is focus on Oceania, where I am located. which is not just Hawaii, but the South Pacific and Australia and New Zealand all are kind of this hole in the megalithic world where there's a lot of stuff, but people don't know about it. So that's become the focus. And that's what I'm really excited about.
Yeah. It's good that you find a passion for your work, if you like. And I've written a book, you've done this, maybe you'll get a book out as well at some point, but when you've got all this information together. But
yeah,
it's important that we document this because it's not going to get covered in any mainstream sense, is it?
No, it's not. It's not. I mean, I'm lucky to get this really off. Like, I'm lucky to get it onto streaming. I'm going to be getting things on streaming. But yeah, it's hard to get. There's a layer. It's hard to break through. Yeah, as you know, like there's a wall that you hit as an alternative researcher to get anywhere where you can get your stuff circulating on a wider level. There's something there, a net keeping us from getting to a higher over the oversaturation level of content out there as well.
I mean, as we saw in 2020, as we've seen in the Middle East now, that the news covers what it wants people to hear. Even with the weather over here, everyone's getting trounced every day that it's hot, and we've had 3 or 4 hot days, and so the news is controlled and academia is controlled to the extent where you really can't believe anything now.
No, you can't. That's gone far to where like some maybe people take it too far even, but like I understand why, because everything's become a lie. But like really, like that just reminds me of all the. I mean, this is we won't go on this tangent because we'll focus on this. But like the weather control, like it's hard. Yeah. Everything's connected, right? The weather control and what they're trying to do, and I figured that's what it was when somebody told me that they're having heat waves in Europe. I'm like, so I go look at the news. I'm like, oh yeah. I bet it's over exaggerated for their agenda. And sure enough, you're right. Yeah.
They're really going even to the point of closing schools and shops and things like that. And isn't that hot? You know, we've had days that are hotter than this here in my lifetime, you know,
right.
Just a few, last week I had my son was playing cricket and I had my jacket on, my ski jacket type, my winter coat watching him. That was last week. So that's a shift in temperature. So going back to what you were saying about controlling the weather, somewhere somebody can pull that lever and make it hot, rain, cold, if they want to. I've got.
Oh yeah. Yeah, exactly. And you know what? Even on I have an app. It's on my phone. You can't erase it. It's the Weather Channel, right? Mm-hmm. And you look at it, and they even have the spray in the background as clouds. Like it's obviously not natural clouds, that milky film of, you know, that shredded cotton candy look that it's like in the background. I'm like, yeah, you guys are all part of it, aren't you?
But I mean, how much of this is linked to the sacred sites? Because a lot of the times, you know, I'm sure you've mentioned, I know you've mentioned that a lot of these sites were some kind of power generators or have you mentioned that in your work?
In this second series, we kind of go into a deeper investigation of that. Yeah. I mean, you know, to be quite honest, we don't know. I think what we do is we put our own knowledge of technology onto these sites and go, yeah, it was a power plant. But, well, I don't really know, right? You know,
I like
to say I don't know because that's the best answer to give. If I did know, I don't want to act like some kind of guru up here, like, yes, I know all this. Because I think they were for some kind of energy, though. There's some kind of transmission. Some people say they were even for, like, pyramids, for example, or for making chemicals, like, you know. And this, there's that theory, too. I mean, I don't know. But when you go inside the Great Pyramid, it looks like a machine rather than, like, for something for form and function rather than, like a tomb, you know. And I just think it's weird. Why would you make a tomb that way? Because if you go to the Valley of the Kings in Egypt, those are tombs and they're all decorated, and then here you're in this weird thing with these shafts and stuff, like it's mechanical looking. So whatever they are, some kind of transmission of energy or some kind of connection to bodies in the sky. I mean, it's hard to know.
I mean, we can only theorize because we've been so wrong about stuff in our lives. the way we used to think, say, 20, 30, 40 years ago, for instance, to how we think now. I mean, I'm all about people listening and me and you, for instance, and Chris, you know, you might have to change your mind again in five, 10 years' time and just alter it slightly to something else. It's pointless saying it was a blooming generator, a power generator, isn't it? You can theorize it was, probably.
Right.
But
yeah, we don't know. I think it's good to stay open. And I've noticed that in this work, with this and just in the general picture of all the stuff we cover on our shows, is half of it we don't know all the answers to, but we are on the investigation, and it's a mystery, and that's what we have to treat it as a mystery.
And that's what, for me, makes it exciting and interesting.
Yeah,
that we don't know.
Yeah, maybe that's what gets us into this work, is the mystery. Ooh. You know.
Yeah and that's all right, isn't it? But to me, that's all right. I'm not, because you're looking for answers, but you don't have to find the definitive answers every time, do you?
Right.
What you can do is find the holes in the machine, in the matrix, if you like, which is what you're doing, what we do, yep, from different angles, many different angles.
Yeah. Yeah. You can just, you know, like I like to treat things like Sherlock Holmes would treat an investigation. We get all the little strands and then try to put them together and make a picture and to our best abilities, you know, because our history has been hidden from us. And because our history has been hidden from us, we have to gather, we look at the story, the one they're telling us, and we go, okay, let's see. And then you see the holes in it, you realize it's made out of a bed of sand, and you go, well, all right, so let's start looking at the other strands of it all and try to piece it together. And that's just detective work, you know, and it's fun. I mean, that's what got to, it's like to say, the mystery is what gets you into this, the intrigue.
And when the scholars, let's say the academics, talk about pyramids, they only mention, the only things they mention are Egypt, really. They don't go into any great detail about other pyramids, do they, mainstream academia? Maybe they might mention stuff in Mexico and stuff, but they don't class them as pyramids, do they, really?
No, and then really, pyramids are all over the world. They're all over the globe. And what were
Let's
they?
Let's bring that map up.
Yeah, there's so many shapes. Yeah. Yeah, look at that. So we got... now, there's one in Africa there in Nigeria. That's interesting. I didn't know that. But
I mean, I just pulled this off Google Maps, so...
Right.
There might be more as well, you know.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah. Google. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right. This is just a mainstream version of it all, but yeah, there is some on, and I think what's the most interesting is why on a little island, like you got the Azores there, the Mauritius over by Madagascar, and yeah, there's a lot of places that people don't think. And Why are they all over they must have had a purpose to put them all over. I mean, there are many different shapes, and you could if you could say, okay, well, the ones in Egypt are pointed and the ones in Mexico are flat on top, but they're still basically the same four-cornered type of structure. But then you don't have to stop there. There's mounds too, and that's what, you know, they have some in North America, so they have the mounds, and I believe they have some in the UK too. Am I right? There's some.
Yes, that's right. Yeah.
Yeah. Some mounds. Yeah,
quite a lot of mounds. Yeah.
Yeah. There's one by Stonehenge, I was noticing.
Yeah, there is. There's one. There's some in Wales as well. Quite a lot in Wales. Mm-hmm. Ironically, we've got in Huddersfield, where I live, it's only a small little mill. It's actually not that small. It's the biggest town in Britain, or it was. Not a city, a town, but it's a mill town. And it's got a place called Castle Hill. I might have to find Castle Hill and show you it. And that's sat on a mound, is Castle Hill. Let me dig it out.
Ah,
show you.
Yeah, dig it out. Yeah, you guys have tons of stone circles too, like all kinds of standing stones in the UK. And there's a lot there, really. So, and that's part of this picture. I mean, it's not just pyramids. It's building with massive stones and things we can't replicate today, and on a global scale. And that's the crazy part about it.
Yeah. It's not probably the best picture. Just done in a rush, that.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Totally. It's on a mound. Yeah.
This is a better picture, actually. It's definitely on a mound, and it stands out from a distance. You can see it, you know, from miles around, and the mound. This is probably better.
There you go. Yeah, that is something. That's something. What? Yeah, it's not just a hill, I don't think.
No, it looks artificial, doesn't it? It stands out in the middle. I mean, it's quite hilly around here, but it's quite flat where that actual mound. Okay. You know, it stands out anyway in the town.
There's a science behind Barry, I think, and it's something that's not taught, but I'm developing the skill myself of looking at a hill and seeing if it's artificial or not. You know, the science of buried megaliths and pyramids is something that is new, really, like, because archaeology isn't covering it, and yet there's all these things, like China has buried pyramids, and Bosnia, and there's this whole you've got to be careful. You can't go, oh, that's everything's a pyramid or a mountain, but there's a good chance that, you know, no one ever checked it out to really look. So
we've got this thing in, well, I live in Huddersfield and Halifax, and we've got this thing called the Bridestone Moor, and these are ancient stones as well. I mean, these things are all over the place, and to say they're just happening sort of like organically and there's no sort of intervention.
Bridestones. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Interesting. Yeah. I've never seen those before. Mm. On the moor. Yeah.
And ironically, our Chris tells a story. They're in Todmorden, I believe, in a place in, it's in sort of Halifax, but it's a little sort of offshoot of a town. And everybody there it's known for people being very open-minded. There's a lot of, spirituality goes on there, meditation and things like that, yoga and all these things. All the people there are very mixed and open there as well. And also, there was a thing known as the Todmorden Triangle, where a lot of UFOs were seen. Chris actually had a sighting when he was a child, and that was going over through the valley where we live, and that was part of the Todmorden Triangle.
Cornwall has got a spot too. Cornwall has a spot. I didn't get to see it when I was there, but there's some there's some stacked stones there, and there's a lot of open-minded people around there, it seems, too. Mm. So I'm just going to add that in. But, yeah.
Well, maybe that tells you that whatever these stones are attracting some kind of energetic, over here we've got a lot of ley lines as well in Britain. All these things seem to be built on.
That's right. Energy sites. And it does attract or make the area around it generally interesting, just to say the least.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So I pulled up a picture, and again, I just got this off Google, searching for different pyramid structures around the world. It just gives you an overview, but not necessarily all of them. I'm not saying it's a full list of them, but you can see that they're all over the world. These weren't built by what we class as modern humans, whatever that means. We haven't got the technology today to build these things.
Oh, yeah, and there's so many different kind of shapes and sizes, but relatively it's the same type of structure. And that one on the right, the Great Pyramid of Cholula, is the largest in the world. It's in Mexico. And it is buried mostly. And they put a church on top of it. And that's something you'll see a lot is another culture will say, a new dominating culture will come in and put something on top to kind of like say, no, we own this. This is ours now, kind of thing. Or they want to own the power of it. In Auckland, New Zealand, there is this mound, and I have it in season 2. It's right in the middle of town. It's called Cornwall Park, actually. There's a mound, and on top of it, a secret society placed an obelisk on top. So it's interesting how that works too. But
that can't happen by accident, can it?
No. I don't think so. I think that's like, hey, we have the power now. We're taking over. You know, it's like gang sign. It's almost like a gang sign, or like a, we're the new gang in town.
Yeah. So all them countries that have these pyramids, all were they all sort of built around? I know it's got the dates on here, but obviously these are mainstream dates. I don't really believe these, but
yeah,
because they're AD and BC, whatever that means. Were they all built around the same time? Has that been identified, or are they built within 100 years? You know,
it's hard to say. Like, I've gone through many different thoughts and iterations of this, but one thought is, yeah, they were all built in a time period where everybody had the same idea, kind of like how we have skyscrapers now. You could go around the world and see, you know, all the big cities have skyscrapers. They all knew. So that means they were all communicating. But there are so many different types, as you can see here in just this mainstream looking thing you got here, this pyramid structure. But it's possible that there was an ancient culture that built more sophisticated, such as the ones in Giza, and then other people, and then maybe a cataclysm happened and people built copies, or maybe with less sophisticated work, because pyramids are different all around the world in the way that some have carved stones, some have stacked rocks, some have you know, small bricks, some have, you know, huge. So they're different in that way too. Like the one on the bottom here, looking at the one in Sudan, those are real small, and they don't really scream that, oh, how the hell they do that, you know, because it you can kind of see. I've not been to them, but I've seen pictures where they're like, you know, like, yeah, I think there's even mortar in there. So it's the more, I think the older ones would be from a lost technology where they're mortarless and they're stacked with huge stones that are carved, or possibly, you know, just put together. Yeah. There's so many iterations. So yeah, I can't even say that just carved stones, but yeah, there's a lot of different ways to make them. And then you see on the bottom here, ziggurats, which are in, you know, like Iraq and Iran. Those are like maybe the oldest form, right? Maybe, you know, because the Sumerians built those. Yeah, so yeah. Maybe that was the beginning of pyramid building right there. Yeah.
And some of these structures, like the size of the stones, where modern day scientists have said, well, how did they get them out of the quarry 100 mile away? And they rolled them on logs in a place where there weren't even any trees. Or they had to push them up a hill. And these things weigh hundreds, if not thousands of tons. And people would not be able to push that. And also, they'd probably sink, you know, the amount of stones as well. It would just take, it'd be impossible.
Especially in a place with sand, like trying to push them through sand. That's difficult, more than difficult. And the interesting thing is too, like you said, quarried. So they're quarried somewhere else, but they're not built usually where they're quarried. So it's an energy spot or ley line possibly that they build these things on. And so they went through all the work, not just to quarry them, but to move them. And that's no joke. That's serious work. Yeah,
and not only that, they've got the, call it technology or insight to know where these ley lines are, supposedly without any technology. We just stone hammers and copper chisels or whatever. That's a basic technology they use, but yet they know where these energy lines are.
Yeah, and that's not primitive knowledge. Like, to be able to know, like, you have to think, like, how long it would take going from hunter gatherers who just cared about surviving to want to do this crazy work and to want to, you know, like, there must have been some kind of intervention of knowledge to even want to have the purpose of doing this. Like, it's almost, that's where you go almost get into the, you know, the, I guess you could say the ancient alien theory, but like mainly you get into like something changed humanity to want to go ahead and do this all of a sudden. What the hell for? Like, you know?
Yeah, what purpose?
Yeah.
At least with the skyscraper, as ugly as they are in comparison to these buildings, at least there's a purpose for the skyscraper. You know, right. Even if it's hamsters on a wheel, at least there's a, they might build a hotel or something. There's, even if it's a plastic purpose, but there is a purpose there. They can't just build these massive stone megaliths for no reason whatsoever.
Right. Yeah. They have a very important purpose, you would think, and something that required so much effort that enough people wanted to go do it together. And I mean, people would have died making these things. They would have, you know, who knows how many people died moving huge stones. I mean, if that's how they did it. But you know, you can get into a lot of theories, like harmonics. Like you can get into like some people may have used sound vibration to move stones. That's a theory out there. There's also the geopolymer theory of having like a cement like thing to make a large stone that way. So there is a possibility that what we think how they carried these stones, maybe it wasn't as hardcore as we think it is. If they were able to make things out of like geopolymer and place in place like that, I don't know though. The answer is D, all of the above.
Yeah, but when you look at the size of the stones that they were supposedly cutting and how they were cutting those with chisels, I mean, even with modern day chisels, it'd be nigh on impossible to. I mean, that stone's probably been there thousands of years, even cut like that, and it's still in more or less intact condition, even with all the weather it's probably had, and whatever else has been going on with it. How straight are those lines?
Perfect.
If they're cutting them by hand, you know?
Yeah. It's like laser-like precision. And that's the unfinished obelisk in Aswan, which brings up the theory that what around the world they were making these things, quarry them like this, or in Easter Island where they have the still embedded in the stone, some of the Moai statues, or there's other places too, where it's like maybe a cataclysm happened right then and they never finished all this, because these unfinished sites make you think like they put a lot of work into that and then they left it. So something happened, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, they found woolly mammoths flash frozen with food in their mouth. So something big happened here more than once, probably.
I mean, what was the, was Egypt a desert when they built these pyramids? I mean, you know, is that what the cataclysm was, that it turned it into a desert overnight, more or less? And because is it true that most of the pyramid is buried anyway? A big chunk of the pyramids are buried.
I think so. Yeah, and that's kind of my work, is going after these buried, forgotten spots, because. I know Mexico's got a lot of buried stuff, but yeah, China, I think, intentionally buried their pyramids, if I'm not mistaken. Right. And there's a lot of things just, you know, they like we're talking about hills, and yeah, there we go. There's a unfinished Moai statue. It's like, look how much work that took to get, and then they just quit. So something happened there. That's incredible. And those are huge. I mean, I haven't been to Easter Island, but I have some friends that have, and yeah, they're massive. Those things go under, you know, the ones that are sticking up out of the dirt, those go all the way down. And that also shows that something happened there, some kind of a landslide, at the very least, I would say that's remnants of the, you know, could be the Great Flood. Yeah. You know, could be multiple cataclysms. I think this Earth has cycles, is cyclical, and that we have quite a few different, cataclysms that happen, and this was the end of some era on the planet, and we're looking at it right there.
I mean, the actual quarries are as interesting, if not more interesting, than the actual statues that are there, because it showed the amount of work that they did to get them into that position. They didn't just cut a rectangle piece of stone, carry it there, and then bury it, and then chisel them bodies onto it. They were actually doing it while it were in situ.
Yeah, they did. Have you seen the, it's the island of Guam. The they're called the Latte Stones, and there's a quarry. You want to look up the quarry for the Latte Stones on it's a Rotu Island, I think it is, R-O-T-U. They're still stuck in the ground, and they're these huge circular discs that they never got out of the ground. And it's quite amazing, too, that they transported those from one island to another, yeah, to then place and move on top of another stone. Like, that's not easy at all.
No.
And that's kind of where my work has taken me into the South Pacific a lot. I haven't gone to Guam and seen these yet. It's quite expensive. You know, I'd have to get funding to get into this work. But, you know, to get to these South Pacific destinations, even though I live in Hawaii, I could actually visit North America for quite a bit cheaper than it would take me to do that instead. It's crazy.
Yeah, I'm trying to get this image of this stone.
There we go. Yeah, there you go. Yep. Look at that. Yeah. Huge.
I mean, and not only that, that we're going to probably accept that the depth of them are probably going to be as much as what we can see there. They're like mushrooms, these things, aren't they?
Yeah. Yeah. And then they take those on a boat, I guess. I mean, I don't know. Good luck.
Yeah. I mean, what sort of boat? I mean, we're led to believe that these people couldn't, you know, if any sort of modern art did this now, they'd be up there with the best artists in the world.
Yeah.
Yet these were guys running around with loincloths on.
Right. There was this, you might have heard of this, in Ethiopia. So what happened is there's these big, they call them, what do they call them? They're like obelisks. They have a name for them, though. I forget what they're called. Right. But the Mussolini took them during one of them during World War II. They had to break it up into pieces and take it on a boat and bring it to Italy. And if you see in modern day what they had to do, to bring it back, they had to like cut. It was a huge ordeal. It was like it was a serious work in our modern day machinery to bring it back to Ethiopia. This is, you know, I don't know, not too long ago, but like that, just to think,
they did that. Is it the from the city of Aksum?
Yes, Aksum. Yeah, right. That's also an interesting point to make. Is that's where the Ark of the Covenant is supposedly at? Is in one of those. Churches there.
Really?
Yeah. There you go. Yeah. They're called More. Are they called More or Marai? Marai. They're called Marai.
Marai. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. And that might be the one that Mussolini took. And they had to cut it into like quite a few pieces to take it. And it was quite the ordeal to get back to Ethiopia. And there's bigger ones that have fallen in over there. And they're just in chunks, and there's no way our machinery now could move these things, the giant.
I mean, look at the techniques that they've used there from a masonry perspective.
Right.
I mean, is that just carved out of one block, or is that just blocks added together?
I think it's all one block, yeah.
I mean, I don't know what's more amazing, if it were smaller blocks added together or just one block.
Well, yeah, because still they'd have to stack them if they were different pieces, wouldn't they? They got the false doorways on there, which is kind of symbolism, you know. The false doors are all over the world too,
right?
So
is that another sort of signature?
Yeah, that is a signature. Yeah, and again, that's different than even the one on the left there in the photo. It's just a regular obelisk that looks like you can find in Egypt, you know. So that could be a different iteration of our epoch of civilization where they started making these false doorways on things.
I mean, that comes to mind that Alice in Wonderland, that false doorway, for some reason, I don't know why.
Yeah, that's probably got it from there. There's one in Peru, it's called Amore Maru or something like that, and you've probably seen it. It's just a door cut into that goes nowhere, but it's a door that goes right into a mountain, and it's just it's quite incredible. It's like, what the hell is that? I mean, they carved. It's like laser, like taken out of the mountain, and it's just there. It's weird. Right.
Yeah. Where's that? Peru.
Yeah, Amore Maru or something. Amaro Maru or I'm bad at some of these names, even though I study this stuff.
Yeah.
It's a different language, you know. I think what's interesting about Ethiopia, before, you know, just to say, is it's they have the Ethiopian Bible there, which has like 22 more books, including the Book of Enoch. And it's the year 2019 in Ethiopia. It's not even, they're like 7 years behind. So it makes you wonder, like, what calendar are they on and what calendar are we on and what time are we supposed to be in? Or, you know, are they on the right time? Are we, you know, it's interesting.
Well, again, the old, well, when they changed the years where BC and AD, and BC goes the opposite way. I mean, how does that work? I mean, anybody with a brain cell knows that that's not the correct way of doing anything. It's just been put in there just to blind us all. But kids are taught it at school, aren't they? You know, that's they taught that as reality. Just let me get this picture up of this.
They taught us that they split everything in half there, BC and AD. Now they call it, what do they call it? BCE. Oh yeah, there you go. That's it. Look at that. Mm. I mean, that's not simple work. Like,
no.
Let's just take a chunk out of this for the hell of it. Like, no way. Mm. No way. Let me go.
No doubt that's in the middle of nowhere as well.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's way up on a mountain, which also kind of gives you an idea with, especially the Peru sites. I've been to Peru, and this is way high up in the Andes. Like, we're talking, you guys do meters or feet in the UK? I forget.
We do everything.
Okay. Well, it's you know, when you fly into Cusco, it's 12,000 feet, which is, you know, what's that, about 4,000 meters or so. So that, I mean, you know, this stuff's up high, and it makes you think, why were they building up so high? You know, the oxygen's poor up there. You know, just walking up to your hotel room, you're like out of breath.
I mean, maybe, I don't know, I'm getting my hypothesizing, that you were surrounded by water at that point, and this wasn't actually that high to them. Who knows?
Yeah, maybe.
Maybe it's high to us because the people that made these things were a lot bigger than us.
That's true. There's the giant part of it, too. I mean, giants are everywhere in our mythology. On the first season of Sacred Site, I had on Heather Arnold, who lives in what's that place called? It's a tropical area. Aruba. She lives in Aruba, and there was giants there. They were documented by Amerigo Vespucci, who America's named after later in history. But he went there and he saw these giant people, and he said when he was standing, he was only up to, when they were kneeling, he was only up to their shoulders or something. They were huge people that were living there, and they had elongated skulls, and that's interesting. So I was glad to bring her on the first season, because even though we didn't cover a whole lot of her work, I was able to sandwich that in a little bit, and it was good.
I mean, are they the elongated skulls that Brian Forrester was talking about, or are they different entities, do you
well
think?
I think they're the same, but I'd never seen the connection between elongated skulls and giants. That was the first time I'd ever heard that connection. So they're
right.
That's there we go.
I mean, just going back to the giants, there's obviously in every ancient culture, there's been talk of giants, hasn't there? I remember when America went, when the US or the UK were fighting in Afghanistan. Was that was it called the Kabul giant or a Kandahar giant or something like that? He was like a tribal leader. He meant to be about 9 foot tall. All these special forces guys saw him. Whether that's real or not, I don't know. But there are all tales out there of all these people that are giants.
Right. Well, I had on my first season Paul Wallace, who told me, I did put it on in the season one real briefly, but he did tell me off air that people write him all the time that were in combat there, that they saw giants, and they're actually not people that are like us. They're like people that are, they don't have anybody to talk to about it. So they write him because he's got, I don't know, maybe over a million followers on subscribers on YouTube. So, you know, you get everybody, but he gets people that are like scared to talk about it, but they saw giants in combat, and that's, you know, that's, there's something about that. And that's the area of the Bible, basically. Well, Afghanistan's a little bit off, but you know, similar part of the area that giants would have been. So,
but if they've been hunted or persecuted or whatever over the ages, they're going to move out of their area, possibly to a different area, or maybe they always live there. Who knows? But there's always been talk of. I mean, David Politis, he's done a lot of work on Yetis and things like that. I mean, a lot of people scoff at that, but there's that many sightings of these things. I don't know if it's real or not. I'm just saying there's a lot of sightings.
You know, I don't know, but the best, I don't know, anybody watching this, listening, should check out Lloyd Pye's work. Lloyd Pye did a talk that I really liked called Everything You Know Is a Lie. And he went into the evolution part of things, but he also went into the Sasquatch part of things, the Bigfoot, and you know, there's a lot of things he said that I can't get past. And I'm like, wow, you know, there's something to look at with that. It's possible that they even our DNA came from these creatures and were a mix of things. It, you know, I keep open to that, but yeah, there's something about that, man.
Yeah. Look, I used to love listening to Lloyd Pye. It was more of a lecture, wasn't it, than a documentary, Everything You Thought You Knew, or whatever it was called. But and it was going back, I think it was like 1999, I think that was. He was way ahead of his time.
Way ahead. And he did die of cancer, really fast-acting cancer. And, hey, I don't know, my conspiracy mind goes there. Maybe I'm wrong, but it's not just me. But there are some people that are... they get this fast-acting cancer, and they're just gone really quick, including Bob Marley.
McGowan did, didn't he? Dave McGowan.
Right. Yeah. And you wonder, you just wonder, because what he was doing is threatening the mainstream science on, you know, the theory of evolution. Like, he might have been hitting a point that they didn't like, and, you know, he was getting some traction, and then he's gone, and he had the Star Child Skull, too, which was... an interesting thing too,
about pretty skulls. Fascinating. It was the fibers in the skull and the thickness of the skull and what have you. He did some DNA checking, and that's around the time when he started to get ill, if I remember rightly.
Right.
And this, nobody talks about that skull anymore. It's disappeared into
Who has
Neverland?
We don't know.
I don't know. I think so. Apparently, some of his, I don't know whether the researchers or who worked with him or someone took it, but you've never heard anything more of it. There's nobody doing podcasts about it anyway, not from my searching. Or I haven't found anybody. Maybe people who are listening can throw us in the right direction to have a look at that. But that brings us back to Brian Forrester with these elongated skulls. I remember watching Brian. He was on a podcast over here called Edge Media. He must have come to the UK. And it was going back. It was actually on Sky, believe it or not. Some of the spurious channels that they had on Sky that nobody really watched, and it was like a conspiracy channel, and it was like heaven before all the YouTube stuff kicked off. YouTube was on, but the connectivity were crap, so you were always playing catch up with connectivity. But so anyway, this was on Sky TV, and Brian was on it, and it was the first time I saw these Paracas elongated skulls, which sort of answered a lot of questions. I don't know if it did for you when you first saw him.
You know, well, he took this research pretty far, and he did do some DNA testing, didn't he? And it did go back to the Black Sea, or
it was near Turkey, I think, wasn't it? Yeah,
that area. Yeah, and the hair on some of these skulls is reddish. Mm. Which doesn't match the ethnicity that's dominated that entire continent. The black hair, the native, the Incas and all those people who all had black hair. What's this red hair? There's a red hair thing here in Hawaii, too, where there's some kind of people that came through here with red hair. So, and it's interesting. But these skulls, they have no sagittal suture. They have no... cranial separation in on the top. So I mean, the birthing of these creatures, sorry for the woman that had the birth, I mean, were they human? And that's the thing. Like, that's, you could not do that cradle boarding. There's just no way you could shape a skull like that. That's incredible.
And the when they cradle board, the volume doesn't get bigger. It's the same volume, isn't it? That you, whereas these skulls had a lot bigger volume inside them. So cradle boarding, they can't have been cradle boarded. I mean, they just don't look the same anyway, do they? Just a facial perspective where the eyes are and stuff, the eyes look a lot bigger.
Yeah, the eye sockets are bigger, yeah. And there's more of a slope to the, well, because of the elongation, but look at that slope. It's not human.
I mean, this should be on every television show. When I first saw these, I thought, why? This should be on every news channel every day.
There's something here that is, and are these the megalith builders? I mean, look at the size of the brain. I mean, okay, I'm not going to say that everyone who has a big brain is the smartest person in the world, but I'm just saying, like, the cranial capacity there is quite large. And if you think about, okay, so there's a connection I've made because I've been to Malta. I did that for season one. And when I went to Malta, you get to go to the hypogeum, which is the underground kind of cavern that they have megaliths underneath these, and they found skulls down there. They were not as elongated as this, but they did have no sagittal suture, just like these. And I got to see them in the Malta Museum. And even on the wall, you wouldn't think academics would put this at all. But it said, are these alien? And it had like a face of a gray alien. I'm like, what the hell? Wow. But here's a place, Malta, where there are megaliths, just like Peru. And you have a different type of human. And maybe that is an answer. I don't know. But it's certainly a parallel you can draw.
I've got friends in Malta. I've been to Malta 30 times, probably, of my lifetime. There's some fantastic places. There's two or three islands off Malta. One of them's called Camino, which is like a blue lagoon. It's a beautiful place. But they've also got the ancient stepping stones as well in Malta. I don't know if you got there. Me and Christian went when we went to Malta.
I've been the stepping stones.
Yeah, I think they're the ancient stepping. Yeah, I think they're called stepping stones. I'm gonna have to look now.
Well, they have a lot there. They have, you know, Gozo or Gigantea temple.
Yeah, Gozo.
Yeah. And they got quite a few temples, and then they also have the cart ruts, which I did a little tangent on that in season one. You know, those are a mystery of their own. Are they even the same era as these temples? We don't even know. You know, Malta's a pretty fascinating place.
Yeah, I hope I'm looking at the right place here.
I guess for you guys in the UK, that's just like a, you know, you could do that in a weekend if you wanted. You could fly there and go out.
Well, yeah, it's only three hours away.
But for us out here, we're way long. This is a long journey out here.
Yeah. I think this is the ones that we went to see. But yeah, there were.
You got so much there though in Malta. Oh yeah, that's Gigantea. Yep. Mm-hmm.
I mean these things. Malta's been fought over for. By many different races as well. It's quite an important place in the middle of the Mediterranean, but also the Knights Templar, hence why the Maltese Cross and what have you. Obviously, it's quite an important place from ancient occult reasons.
That's right. The Knights of Malta, I tried to go when I was there because, you know, I'm doing a lot of work trying to see a lot of things, and when I was there, I tried to find the Grand Master's house, and I'm asking everybody. Nobody knew where it was, but it's a place you can find. It's hidden. I don't know. In what's that called? Valletta.
These are the Scorba temples or something like that. They call them. But there's quite a lot.
Oh yeah, There's a lot there.
There's actually a big page here that I've just found. I haven't been to see half of these, but
well, that's the thing. There's so much there, and I feel like a place like that is going to have a lot of underground places. I mean, how they found the Hypogeum is there was a guy working on cisterns in the early 1900s, and he fell through and found the Hypogeum. Yeah. Yeah, look at those doorways, too. That's one of the things that I really was impressive is these doorways. That's big.
I mean, I'm going on these mainstream UNESCO dates, but it says 3,500 BC.
Which is 5,000 years ago.
Yeah.
Which is older than the pyramids, according to mainstream academia.
So I suppose, going out on a limb, if they're putting doorways there, I suppose the question that comes to your mind, and they're building them on energetic ley lines, are these portals of some nature? Yeah,
that's an interesting thought. There's something I discovered there. All the temples face southwest, and I thought, and I made the connection that maybe, just maybe, if Atlantis was in North Africa, maybe that's why it's all desert. Something destroyed it. But there's the Reshot structure. I'm not saying it right. It's supposed to be in what's it called? The Mali? Is it Mali, Africa, or one of those North African countries? Mauritania, that's what it is. Right. There's one of those it's like a circular labyrinth thing, and some people think that was that center of Atlantis. So is it possible to hypothesize that these doorways and these temples all facing that direction would be connected to that central point in Atlantis, if it was where some researchers say it was? You know, you have to go out on limbs, and
To go out on limbs. Yeah,
yeah, yeah,
definitely. So, but with a lot of doorways, and they're all facing in the same direction, you have to go there, don't you? Because otherwise, the research drags you there, whether you like it or not.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. You know, but it's very interesting. Why that direction? You know, is that the wind direction? I don't think that would be important. Yeah. But why is Malta so important? You know, it's just this tiny little dry island. I was telling my listeners I do two shows. I do Sacred Site podcast, which is this about my adventures doing places like this. I called it a Catholic Middle East because it's like, it looks like the Middle East with the tan color, but everything's Roman Catholic. So it's an interesting place, just this little place with so much.
Mm. Did you go to the ancient... It's like a walled city there. It's called Medina. I don't know if you went there.
I may have.
Yeah, it's an amazing place. And again, you go... And all these places as well.
Yeah, I did go there. Yeah, yeah. The names are hard there for me. First time, you know? Like, that language is a split between Arabic and Italian. So it's really odd. Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Uh-huh.
And again, that is on a small hill. I know they built these things on hills to protect them, but are they building something on top of something there?
Yeah, that's a good question, right? I saw that even in Croatia. I saw this little town. I can't remember the name, but there was a, just like this, Catholic stuff on top of a hill that was sloped perfectly. And I was like, I wish I had time to investigate that, but I didn't have. Because you know, even I drive my wife along on these trips, and she's not all as diehard as I am.
Yeah, we're pretty hardcore. But these, even though they're Catholic, they're very Arabic as well. There is a crossover, isn't it, in the build? And you're right, the Maltese language is very Arabic. It's more Arabic than Italian, actually.
I would say so. Yeah. And I don't know Arabic, so for me, going there, I was trying to pronounce these names, and I was like, I'm probably not doing it right because I don't know what those like hyphenated things, how you're supposed to say them, you know.
Again, it's probably an ancient language, isn't it, as well? You know, that's probably been the British. Probably a lot of people in Malta speak British, speak English, should I say? And they speak Italian as well. So, because a lot of Italians go there on holiday, etc. So their language, probably they're losing their ancient language, like a lot of these places are as well. Like American Indians and...
That's important too. Like the language is a link to the past. And here in Hawaii, they changed. So there's 12 letters in the Hawaiian alphabet. When they standardized it with the missionaries came in here and they cut out 4 or 5 letters. So, you know, they purposely cut the link off for people to kind of connect with their culture, I think, when they cut the language like that.
So I want to go into the Bosnian pyramids as well. I pulled this off Wikipedia. Interesting. It says Bosnian pyramid claims. I like that. They can't just let it go, can they?
No, they cannot. I mean,
why would somebody not want these to be pyramids, for instance? Because they're shaped like pyramids. They're two pyramids shaped for a mountain or a hill.
Right. Yeah, I mean, here's an interesting thing that I thought about, and I like to, I don't think anyone owns this information, so I like to say that, but like Graham Hancock, I have no problem with, but Robert Schock and a few other guys that are in that mainstream kind of alternative research all debunk this as not being a pyramid. So I go there and I'm like, well, I don't know. Why are they saying that? Not to say, I feel like it needs more investigation, this place. It's definitely, there's an energy there too. And see, I'm not one of those people that goes, whoa, I feel the energy of this awesome place. Like, you know, I'm actually kind of more grounded on that level. But when I went on top of that thing, I felt it and I felt good. And there was something with that place. So I'm going to have to say that there is an energy there actually like I've never felt anywhere on Earth. So something's there. Something's there for sure.
Well, I've been going to Croatia now for the last I went in 2022 for the first time, me and my wife and my youngest and my daughter went as well. Went there because they were the only place where you didn't have to be tested, wear a mask, and have a jab in Europe, right? They were the only ones. So that's why I went to Croatia. And I find the people, I find the people there so proud of the country. It's like going back in time where they have these real values. I'm sure there's some bad people there, like everywhere, but everyone I've met there, from taxi drivers to people who work in hotels or whatever, are really proud of their country. And likewise in Montenegro as well. That whole coastline, and I'm sure Serbia and Bosnia are the same.
Yeah, like when you get a taxi driver in Croatia, they're Croatian. They're not foreign-born people.
Yeah.
So, and that's kind of nice. Because you feel connected to the culture as soon as you get out of the airport. And I like that. And the fact that they haven't lost their culture, that's a good thing, because there's so many places that have lost their culture, you know, and the West now is losing its culture because of all this stuff too, you know? So it's like, it's good to go somewhere like that. Cause then they're going to have a link at least to when they began their culture there, which is good.
Yeah, because the West has lost its ancestral connection, hasn't it? We're not connected to our ancestors. I noticed the next countries down, Albania, are kicking off because Kushner and his wife, Trump's daughter, have been given an island to build some sort of hotel resort on, and all the Albanians are going and smashing it all up, and kicking off, because basically they're calling it the Zionist takeover. Quite interesting, because the Albanians don't seem to piss about when something's annoyed them. So you've actually been to these sites and Lumos?
Yeah, Bosnia.
Yeah.
I went there on the same trip I went to Malta. I didn't get to go to the other pyramids. So if I ever go back, that's my goal. There is stones. There's stonework there. There is some stones that the guy, his name is Sam Osmanagich, and he has done work on the stones they found, which they say is a harder concrete than any concrete of today that was created there. And so there are stones. So it's not just a mountain with trees. So that's one thing that, and then there's tunnels about a mile away that are throughout this area, vast tunnels networks. And it's quite a good place to go. I recommend going. People go there that are trying to, that have diseases and sicknesses because of the energy. They actually lay down in these tunnels. And I felt kind of bad because here I am going through one of the tunnels with a flashlight. And I get into this room. There's all these people laying in there. Here I am invading them with this big light in there. I'm like, oh, yeah. Sorry, guys. I didn't know. But and I'm narrating, you know, I felt kind of bad about it. But anyway, it's a real energetic spot. And there's something magical about it. And I recommend going. I think it needs more exploration. And I think people need to give it a second chance that are debunking it as well, because it is something. It's not nothing.
Yeah. And if I remember rightly, watching the videos of the chap you just mentioned, I won't try and say his name again. It looks like granite from inside, like concrete, poured concrete. Yeah. And again, the cutout of the tunnels, I mean, when was that done? Because the tunnels are, am I right in saying they're like man-made tunnels? Whatever man-made it means.
They've been buried. Yeah. So they've been filled in. So what they're doing there, this is the only site on Earth that I know of that's open to the public to do volunteer work, where you can, you know, like if you want, you can go in there and help out and start taking gravel out of these tunnels so they can. The idea is, so the government stopped Sam Osmanagich from digging on the actual main pyramid. So instead, they're going to tunnel to it. So they're going to tunnel from about a mile away. And that's the idea. So hopefully they get there. And that would be interesting.
What does the government there think of these? Are they just denying that the actual pyramids are saying the Mount Hills? Yeah,
they are. Yeah, and it's kind of an interesting clash of culture there, because you got it's a Muslim country, and then you got the locals in this little town called Visoko there, and I don't know if they're real happy about what is happening there, because maybe they just want to do regular life, and you got all these tourists coming there. It's kind of a mix of things. Like, I didn't know if I felt that welcome there or not by the locals, and you know, I don't want to piss anybody off, but like, I didn't know, you know, so you go there, but I mean, it's a mix. There's some people that are all for it, and there's some people that are like, you know, they don't like it. So,
yeah,
but the government, I don't think they care much about it, but I don't really know. They went through a war not long ago. I mean, this is a war-torn country.
That's right.
Yeah. That's right. You can still see bullet holes in buildings and stuff like that.
Okay. Just to end this, we're going to look at these are in Hawaii, your neck of the woods. I mean, that looks pretty pyramid shaped to me at the end.
Yeah, yeah, that's just the end of a mountain, though.
It's not a pyramid.
It's not. No, I've been there. That's on my island, in fact. I went there for season two just because that's like the big claim online. You're like, okay, I already knew it wasn't, but.
It looks the outline of a canyon, doesn't it? All the way around.
Yeah, but if you see about two notches back on the mountain, there's another pointed peak, and that's just erosion. Yeah. That's just the way the mountain eroded. So it's good to be objective thinkers with this too, because we don't want to be like, oh yeah, that's a pyramid, and you know. But there are hidden pyramids here, and they've been hidden by secret societies. In season two, I'm going over the fact that the last king of Hawaii, who was a 33rd degree Freemason, hid
obviously
a pyramid, and they actually stole and destroyed and buried it, and they stole big slabs, and he had them put in the basement of the palace, which is on a ley line. So it's all interesting and connected. It's pretty crazy. So
that's not dissimilar to what Mussolini did with that obelisk or that Ethiopian statue, really, is it? Destroy it and bring it back to Italy.
Yeah. So it tells you too that these are not connected to the culture. So here we have a king of Hawaii in 1870s, 80s, who was, you know, supposed to be connected to the culture. But if he would have been connected to the culture, he wouldn't have done that to that site. So I believe it's older than the Hawaiians, and it's not part of their culture. And that seems to be the case with a lot of these things. You can even go to Egypt and you go there and they're not connected to that because they're all Muslims. That's a newer religion in that region, that so they're not connected to that either, really, you know. So everywhere you go, no one's really connected to these sites. I mean, even in the UK, I mean, is there anyone really, a culture really connected to Stonehenge or Avesbury Hinge that much, right? So same thing. Yeah.
I mean, even in, say, the Dark Ages, there was, you know, the Romans just sort of disappeared from Britain. So, I suppose theory is that there was a cataclysm in the Dark Ages, so-called Dark Ages, whenever that was, that wiped a lot of people out in southern Britain.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, the weather here, apparently in Britain, it was warm enough in the north of England, which is always cold where we live, to grow wine and have vineyards and things like that. So all this, again, going come full circle really with the climate change nonsense. The climate was a lot warmer back then for them to be able to grow vineyards here. So
yeah, that's the medieval warming period you're talking about there, and that's erased from our history. And that goes into something I wanted to say just in general is, there are answers in the past that tell us in the present that are important, that show us that we've been lied to. Like, that's not included in the graph, the hockey stick graph that of the weather going in this horrible direction and the little ice age, which followed the medieval warming period. So that just shows you, just in a small sample, of how they control the narrative in history.
I mean, those graphs, the real graphs, it's similar to the vaccine graphs where they just show the end of it. They give all these vaccines out in the 1950s and it looks like the illness drops through the roof. But what they're not showing you is that it was more or less at zero before they'd started the rollout. And so they use this over and over again, this same tried and tested method of fear that gets everybody into this state of frenzy where they can't make a decision for themselves. And they just hand over jurisdiction of their welfare and the children's to satanic psychos.
Dark occult. And they take everything and they invert it. And we're here. Yeah. You know, we're here seeing that it's inverted and backward, and we're, I don't know. I wonder about us people that are into this information, if there's a different DNA or something in us that we're immune to this or something, because we can see through it, where I don't know. But see, the thing is I couldn't even be DNA, because I know siblings, one's awake, one's totally asleep. So yes. I can't even say that. I don't know.
No. But maybe the DNA is one thing, i.e. like the bloodline type of I like the sacred sites, I like studying genealogy.
Yeah.
And there is something there, but a guy I remember saying, he said, you've got to look at it as though there's a bloodline within a bloodline more than just the bloodline. So there are other, a bit like the Rh positive and Rh negative sort of scenario, where you might have the same DNA, but if somebody's got a slightly different bloodline, they're looking for something totally different that we probably will never know to put these leaders in place. I mean, in Britain, probably in America as well, they go through, I just did a podcast with a chap who did a film called Boarding on Insanity about boarding schools. And in my book, I lay out that a lot of the people that were running 2020 and politics in general, but just focusing on 2020, they all went to these boarding schools and they all wrote about getting beaten the shit out of. And they were being taught by people who had been accused of abusing children afterwards. but they've never mentioned this while they got into politics, yeah? So there's something else about, yeah, it's the bloodlines, but also the trauma, and to bring out this psycho, whatever, genetic trait that they've got, that they carry, to be able to carry out and kill, a bit like Trump, where he flattens Iran and kills a school full of girls, children, and doesn't even blink.
Yeah.
Doesn't even say sorry.
You would have to have a certain person that has a certain consciousness level that, or soul, maybe it goes down to a soul level that doesn't have any empathy whatsoever. Mm. You know, that can go to sleep at night and, well, my neighbor's psycho like that. She's, and she's not in politics, but she can actually, you know, do some horrible things to her neighbors and just be in her yard like nothing happened. I don't understand, but psychopathy. There's a third, 3% of our population, maybe 5%, it has psychopathy. And I guess that's what it is. But when we get into these politicians, though, we're talking like possibly like
different
demon
levels.
Possession or,
But I would use it about, I remember reading an article, I know we're tripping away from your sacred site stuff, but reading an article by Ben Affleck, who have done genealogy on, and Matt Damon, but them two are cousins. And he did an article where he said all actors are narcissists. He said, and you have to be an actor. And a lot of these people then are related to, I found out that Matt Damon and Ben Affleck and a lot of these famous actors and singers are related to serial killers like Jeffrey Dahmer and people like that. And Taylor Swift shares a relative with Jeffrey Dahmer, a direct relative with Jeffrey Dahmer. I did a presentation called Assassin's Creed, which was, I'm going to have to do another one because it was, I got a lot more information now. That was an early one about 3 years ago. To do an Assassin's Creed 2.
That's very interesting. I'm interested in that, that's for sure. Well, there is something, and then you know, you can actually circle this back to what the bigger topic we're talking about, because like really these are the people that have been controlling history too, these same groups, and their mentality to, you know, just completely control a whole entire part of civilization that and not even think twice. And most people that are good people, they want the truth, and that's something that there's missing in these characters, that almost makes you think, you know, because you say you wrote the book about the people that never got arrested from all this COVID nonsense. It's like, how do they go to sleep at night, and how do they live with themselves? These are
Chris says they sleep like babies. He said they'll go home and just sleep like babies. You know, I mean, I don't whether they do or not. I don't know. They might sleep in a wardrobe upside down, in the dark. For all we know.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we don't know. They might do all kinds of stuff. Ew. You know, you don't even want to know. You don't want to know. The Epstein files will tell you something. So, but incredible,
interesting. All right, then, Luma, shall we leave it there? Till next time. Yeah.
Sure. Go ahead, sorry. I was going to say, I'm working hard at Sacred Site Season 2, and that should be out, hopefully, October. But I can't. There's a lot of moving parts, but it's going to be 3 episodes, and it's going to be, I think, pretty good, big, and hopefully it'll circulate a lot. I'm working on that part, too, so.
Yeah, good. And we'll put all the links in the show notes. And when you release it, when you do release it, whether it's October, that's a good excuse to get you back on and to discuss it. Yeah? Because I know Chris will be slightly pissed off, although he's worried about his cat. Because if you start talking about giants, Chris is all over it.
We'll go. We'll continue this conversation.
We'll have to do. Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right, everybody. Thanks for tuning in. If you join us in part 2, we'll see you there.